Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, it's Dave Weiner here, and we're here ready for another... Oh, wait a minute. There's the music. Alright, hey, I wasn't expecting that. Alright, another bad hair day. And Marshall, are you there? Let's have some bad hair.
I sure am. My hair's standing up and doing a dance with those tunes.
Awesome. I was just playing around with the Blog Talk Radio software, and I happened to make this little soundbite thing, and it's never worked before, but today for some reason it worked. That's really nice. That was Little Feet, I don't even remember what song it was. I'm jet lagged. That was the first disclaimer I put on my list here. I just wrote a blog post about this, that some days it's better just to say nothing. And for me, today would be one of those days, because my brain is somewhere over North Canada right now, and I'm 9 time zones ahead of where I actually am. So, who knows? It'll be yellow for me. So we're looking for the show today from you, Marshall.
Sounds good. I have been staying in town and getting good sleep lately, so I'm here for you.
So you've been to any good conferences this week?
You know, I have not. The last conference I went to was one called Open Source Bridge here in Portland. That was about 2 weeks ago. I find it really difficult to work when going to conferences. Maybe everybody does, but you know, it's a struggle enough for me to write 2 or 3 blog posts a day and do some other stuff, even in the privacy of my own home. But put me out there in the wild
I was curious about that conference. That was. Sort of, was it at the same venue that the O'Reilly Open Source Convention had been at?
I believe so, yeah. It was, you know, at the Oregon Convention Center in downtown Portland. That's where most of the big events have been. And, yeah, the O'Reilly Open Source Conference had been in Portland for a number of years in the past, but they just picked up and left to go to San Jose, I believe. So a bunch of people here in Portland in the open source community decided to take it upon themselves to organize another big open source conference in Portland, and I think it went real well. People all seemed to enjoy it quite a bit. We had a bunch of read-write webbers there covering it. I got to see just a little bit myself, mostly chatting with people in the halls and what have you, but everybody seemed happy, and it was jam-packed, full of folks.
Really? So did people come from far away, from outside of Portland for that?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I talked to somebody from Chicago, I think somebody from New York. People came from pretty far and wide.
That's great. It seems to me that an open source conference should be run pretty much that way, on almost an ad hoc basis, that, you know, there's something fairly ad hoc and not corporate about it. I'm going to press here. I'm like you. I don't go to very many conferences. I just went to one, my first tech conference of the year. That's why I'm so jet lagged. I went to Copenhagen to the Reboot conference, and it was pretty cool. I mean, Reboot is always cool. It's become familiar. It's a European tech community, mostly pretty young, web related, and a lot of beer gets drunk, and it's sort of a chance to meet up with more or less the same people each year, and so it's kind of nice. I saw people from the publishing world. Those were the main contacts that I made, people from news organizations and the tech side of the news, which is always, those are the problems where you have people that are doing the technology of news. It's sort of, you know, where my focus has been.
Hearing you.
I have a feeling
you just ended
up
in
the
I suspect that other folks are hearing just fine, and it's an issue
okay,
of mine.
Okay, let's just keep going. Let's just keep going until something happens. I just talked about the Reboot Conference.
That's
so
great.
I didn't even know you weren't there. So.
Oh, I was half here.
Oh, you were? Okay. So
and now you sound like a dream come true.
Do you know what I think the problem is? I think it's my DSL. I think that's what's going on here. I think that my DSL kicks in and it knocks out my Skype for whatever reason it's doing it. Maybe my phone rang or something. I don't know. Anyway, let's try to get this back on track here. Yeah.
Sounds good. That's great that you made it out to Europe and got to connect with all those folks out there. It sure is nice. I hope that the tech blogosphere is having a less U.S.-centric perspective these days.
Well, they're trying
to. Do you get that feel?
It's hard to know. I mean, I am very U.S.-centric myself. So, that's one of the reasons I try to go to conferences overseas, because I want that for myself, but I can't help it. I think, USA all the way, right? I mean, it was, so it's hard to say. While I was over there, there was a conference here that I saw you commenting on, the PDF, Personal Democracy Forum. Were you able to watch that at all, see any of the stuff?
I just saw the tweets go by, and mm-hmm. It's something that I've been thinking about a little bit for the last several years, and I think this year convinced me that I really want to go. It looked real neat. The coolest thing that I saw come out of there was something that I wrote about, and that was a Sunlight Foundation project called Transparency Core, and it's like Mechanical Turk for government transparency work. You can go in if you've got just a minute or two to spare, and you can perform a small task that a human could perform better than a machine in service of open government data. So the first thing they have you doing.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to ask if there was an example.
So the first task they ask you to do is to look over some congressional earmark request documents. They tend to be about one page long, and to verify some machine extracted data fields and/or fill them in yourself, like the name of the project and the sum being requested and the address of the recipient and the justification given in requesting the funding and stuff like that. And you can just do it lickety-split. The user experience is great. And then as a result, if they can get a whole bunch of people to do that, that each document has multiple people go over it and fill out these fields so they can verify it. And then they'll have structured data all about these earmark requests. So you can it'll be queryable. You can mash it up. They'll be able to do all kinds of neat things with it that you couldn't have done when it was before it was in a structured format.
That's good. I'm glad people are doing stuff like that. I often thought that they could turn use video games to run the street lights, the traffic lights of a city. It's like if you had a game where human intellect as an input device. I mean, these are all good things, the Mechanical Turk stuff. But if you make a game out of it, you get people to do this stuff a lot more. They do it a lot more if it were fun, in addition to just being good citizenship.
And something like that sure would be nice, because for all the awesomeness of that project, I'm real worried about their ability to stir up enough interest. From a journalistic perspective, posts like that don't get a whole lot of page views. There's a handful of people who get real excited about them. But you tell someone that Facebook or Twitter or MySpace is doing something that's going to affect them directly and immediately, and that'll get passed around a whole heck of a lot.
Totally.
This stuff.
Yeah, there are certain things you have an intuition about that people will get excited about, and good government is not one of them. as much as you wish it would be that way. I mean, you said there was something else you said this week that wouldn't get a lot of page reads. I'm trying to remember what that was.
I think that's what it is. It's, government data stories. I mean, there's some really important stories coming out right now about open government data and some real hot controversies I'm working on a post right now asking whether the U.S. government and governments in general should be offering APIs or not. And
is
I find it fascinating.
Is that controversial?
It is to some degree. Yeah. The counterpoint there, so far in my research, comes from a fellow who I'll have to look his name and position up again before I write about it, but a fellow over at the Sunlight Foundation who argues not necessarily that they shouldn't open APIs, but that that would be a funky place to have the government put its priorities, because while it's good to get data out and available, that API will still, it still represents another level of abstraction, whereas what people like here calling for is bulk raw data, and allowing, you know, he said other organizations should be able to build the APIs themselves on top of that data, but if the government builds them or even contracts with a private API provider, then they run the risk of having, you know, there's another layer of interpretation and the opposite of transparency there in the construction of that API.
Mm-hmm. You just want the data.
Yeah.
So, this latency here, let's just go, you know, if you, we can talk over each other. So if you feel like, you know, you have something to say, don't wait, just go.
Okay.
Obviously, the latency on this. Don't be sorry. That's silly. Let's find something we disagree on, because everything here has been too cool so far. We need to argue about something. What should we argue about?
I don't know, Dave. I'll tell you. Perhaps a nice segue. I was telling you before we started here that I wanted to tell you about another project that I'm working on, that's real related to that one, and it kind of goes into the Twitter and Facebook thing too. So I'm working right now with a great guy named Chris Cameron, who's a research intern at Read Write Web. He's a guy at the Cronkite School of Journalism in Arizona, and he is doing some research with me where we've gone and looked at all these folks who have invested in Twitter, and/or you know, who work at the funds that have invested in Twitter, and we've looked their names up on Open Secrets to see what kind of political contributions they've made over the years, We're going to split those names up into the people who have made the majority of their donations to the Republican Party versus the majority of their donations to Democratic candidates, and we're going to see what kind of data we can extract from their Twitter use and see if there are peculiar habits of Republican or Democrat Twitter backers.
Now, you're talking about the people who have invested in Twitter, is that right?
Yes.
So, like, Bijan Sabe and Fred Wilson and Evan Williams, and they're all Democrats, aren't they?
We've got a list of 250 political contributions that have been made by people who, you know, either have personally invested in Twitter or who work at the funds that have. It's about 2/3 to 1/3 Democrat, maybe 70%.
Right. Well, he might be a Republican, Mark Andreessen. I think he's an investor. He might be a Republican.
Uh-huh.
But what does it mean if they're Republicans or Democrats that they might favor
I don't know yet. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at those people and we're going to pull the metrics that we can out of Twitter. We're going to say for each of these folks, how many friends do they have? How many people do they follow? Yeah. How many tweets per day on average do they do? And we're going to grab the RSS feeds for their messages and run them through a keyword frequency analyzer and see if the Republican folks tend to talk about certain subjects more versus the Democratic.
Well, here's one I want you to do, okay? This is right on topic. This morning I saw a tweet from Chad Dickerson, who is, I believe, the CTO at Etsy, E-T-S-Y. And he was retweeting something that somebody else at Etsy had said, you know, that isn't it cool? Now we've got over, like, 400,000 followers, and we've had all this growth in just a couple of months. So I said to myself, this sounds suspiciously like the suggested user list here. And so I looked, and sure enough, they're on the suggested user list. And then said, well, now I seem to remember Etsy. Weren't they a Fred Wilson investment? And, yep, I looked them up, and sure enough, Union Square Ventures, which is Fred's venture fund, had invested
yep.
in it. So
yep. Etsy's a fantastic company, too. I mean, they're really neat, but, yeah.
But why should there be a but? You see, there's the problem, okay? You should say
uh-huh.
Etsy's a fantastic company, end of sentence. Why should there be a but? But they had the table tilted for them. Maybe, maybe not. Fred Wilson says he didn't ask for the favor. But, you know, they said that Dick Cheney, a former vice president, never told anybody at the Department of Defense to give no-bid contracts to Halliburton, but somehow Halliburton got a lot of no-bid contracts. And, you know, the theory on that is that somebody in there who made the decision knew that, oh, yeah, I better be popular. They're part of the family or whatever, you know. So see
uh-huh.
if you can find – I mean, it starts getting a little creepy when it starts getting down to, you know, there's the companies they invest in, the ones they don't, and the political candidates they support don't. You know, why does John McCain, you know, why is he on the suggested user list but not,
uh-huh.
you know, McCaskill, you know. I can't imagine that a politician, by the way, would accept that because, however, quite a few of them have, because of the appearance of impropriety. That, you know, here we are receiving a donation, and for illegality, actually. Because I'm not a lawyer, but I think they have to declare any contribution given by a company, you know. Try not to have our politicians affected by that, you know. So.
Well, it's a pretty intangible contribution, isn't it? I mean, it's social media
no.
flow.
Oh, come now, please.
It is quantifiable, you're right.
Yes, I mean, Marshall.
Directly
please,
quantifiable.
We're intelligent adults here, you know. I mean, that's the never-never land that some of the people like Tim O'Reilly, who posted a thing since our last podcast, he said basically, oh, well, Dave is just, like, angry because he's not on the suggested user list. To which I said, that's nonsense. I mean, I have this ambivalence as to whether I would even accept it or not if I were on it. I'm certainly not lobbying to be put on it. You know, it's the problem is it taints everybody. It gets everybody in this sort of creepy mood that they question each other's motives. And Twitter's become so popular, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, no, of course it has tangible value, you know?
Yeah.
I think. I mean, you know, well,
right.
Let's move on. Oh.
Okay. Well, so
sorry.
One of the things that fascinates me so much about, you know, I don't really care too much, you know, what political party a particular venture capitalist favors. Not too much. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily want to, you know, we won't get into that. But this is something you can do on Twitter. You can say, you know, here are some usernames that are in the open air, and I can cross-reference these names with their behavior on the site, and I can, you know, it might be Republican or Democrat backers, and I can compare, you know, look at what they talk about, but I could just as easily do the same thing with knitters, or I just heard a story today about a really interesting sounding demo that happened here in Portland last night about a site that aggregates restaurant reviews from tweets. And the guy that built this site says that for every one Yelp review about a restaurant, he pulls in 50 Twitter messages about these restaurants. So there's
all what kind of messages, like good food, bad food, you know, 140 character reviews of the restaurants. Is that the idea?
I don't know that it's the authors of the tweets don't necessarily intend it that way. It's more, you know, a search feed for probably the restaurant name with some keywords that are food related to make sure that it's not, you know, a common word being pulled in instead of
what's the significance of finding a tweet about a restaurant? You know, if
oh, it's great.
I mean, it's a
little snippet of conversation. You know, it's the difference between going to a restaurant, knowing nothing about it, versus getting to hear a whole bunch of little snippets of conversation that people have had about that
okay,
restaurant.
Okay, so So they have to be saying something about it, like, well, the ambience was great, but the food stank, or I really...
Not necessarily. I mean, I don't know for sure how this particular service handles that, but they wouldn't necessarily need to. I mean, if I saw, you know, a bunch of people just saying that they went there, I mean, odds are people are going to have expressed some kind of opinion in a substantial number of those messages. But just about any kind of conversation that restaurant name comes up in is interesting to me.
Is it? Okay.
I
wonder sometimes, I'm starting to get, you know, starting to find Twitter to not even be all that useful, to be honest with you. I mean, I had a number of experiences on this trip where people asked me for information that I had posted 5 minutes ago on Twitter, you know, mm-hmm. but because they're following so many people, it scrolled off, or I don't know what's going on the other side to be able to say, but I can tell you on my side, it's frustrating. This thought of, you know, I'm tweeting this, therefore this information is registering somewhere, you know. You know, Scoble pointed this out in a post the other day. He posts something on his blog that has a permanence that things that you post on Twitter simply don't have. I mean, how is that going to work? You know, this restaurant review thing, how is that going to work? Yelp keeps stuff around for years, right? But Twitter stuff, we have no clue as to how long.
A third party can pull it in and cache it, I think.
Right.
So there is that difference. But there are other...
I see. These guys would have to do that if they're if they're wanting to provide that service. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you don't want to be... I didn't. No, it was at a Portland event called Demolicious.
So you didn't get the name of the company?
No. I can see if I can...
We'll get that for the show notes, and we'll put it on if we can find it. We'll have this later, so if you're listening right now, we'll definitely have it.
I do a search in Google for Demolicious, and I've got the Grease Monkey script running that puts Twitter search results on the top of my Google page, and it's not from 60,000 particularly popular Twitter users, but all Twitter users, and I'd find all kinds of interesting information there to augment my Google search results.
I see.
So I bring that up just in reference to the Bing thing.
Right. We should talk about that a little bit. What did they say they're doing?
So Bing got a whole bunch of press yesterday. I mean, I was shocked by how much press they got in regards to an announcement that they made, where they said that for some queries, they would be displaying the most recent Twitter messages from a select group of popular Twitter users right along with their web search results. Mm. So it was taken as a shot at Google. You know, Bing is getting the first foot forward in real-time microblogging search.
Do you see it that way? Do you see it as a leg up on Google?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it just struck me as so silly, to be honest, because, you know, the day that Bing launched, I went over to userscripts.org and found that someone had written up a little Grease Monkey script that threw, you know, the full Twitter search on the top of your Bing search results page. And I'd use a script for Google that where every time I do a Google search, I see, you know, the things with the most page rank and inbound links in the primary area of Google. But my eyes glance first past, you know, the 5 or 10 most recent Twitter search results that are inserted via Grease Monkey up at the top of the page there. And it's been wonderful. It's been absolutely fantastic. But there's something that just made me scratch my head. I mean, it's a huge thing for me to have that experience, and yet it's so simple to do.
But you do understand, if it works for you, though, most people are not Grease Monkey users, and they're not going to – I'm not, for example. I do not have any Grease Monkey scripts, and don't tell me about it because I don't want to do it. It's just not going to happen. You know?
So, oh, you're still missing out, Dave.
I know. I know, I'm weird that way. I'm a late adopter when it comes to things like that, but I also keep my user experience somewhat in line with what real users are doing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
I respect
nobody
that.
Nobody has Grease Monkey scripts on their, you know, I mean, in terms of percentages. So, you know, I wouldn't find it useful. I thought you were going to say something else, that your eyes just go right over it and skip down, because that's what I would do. I find, for example, like I do a bunch of, I have Google alerts, right, that for maybe 20 or 30 different search terms. So I get emails, some of them once a day, and some of them, you know, as they happen for things that I'm really following. And so lately they've been including tweets in there, and I think that's noise. If they had a checkbox that said I could just turn off the tweets, I would do it.
Wow.
So, like, yeah, I know. We're in different places. I'm really getting sort of sour. I mean, I'm the guy that loves Twitter that thought, oh, my God, this thing has so much potential as the news system. And I still think it does as the news system of the future. But all these attempts to try to find significant data in the snippets of 140 characters, people just artful at using the 140 characters. It's just getting – it's starting to run out of its charm for me, and I'm honestly, Marshall, when those things come in, they never have any data in it. They never have anything that's useful.
And let me tell you how I
go ahead.
This is so crazy. I can't expect, you know, any more than 10 people in the world to do it this way. Though I really question that. I think there's thousands of people could do it this way. The way that I use this kind of stuff, and the way that it works into my research workflow is, for example, I'll find something online, a company or a phenomenon, and I'll think, I want to write about that, but I want to see what other people have written about it first. So I'll highlight that word or phrase in my browser, and I've got a then I'll click and I'll drag on it, and I've got this Firefox plugin called Drag and Drop Zones that's really kind of futuristic feeling, or a little sci-fi feel. It, when you click and drag on a highlighted word, this matrix of search engines pops up as an overlay, a transparent overlay over your screen, and I've assigned a whole bunch of different search engines to each of the squares in that overlay. And so say I drop my phrase of interest, I'll drop it into a custom search engine of the top 25 Web 2.0 review blogs, product review blogs, and I'll see what a bunch of our competitors have written. Or I'll drop it into analyst firms with blogs, custom search engine, and then
you
when
are
I do that,
amazing. That is amazing.
It's awesome. So
yeah.
Then when the results drop down, the first thing I notice on that Google search results page in that custom search engine is the Twitter search results feed for that same term. So I might notice, you know, here are all of the articles in our competitors that our competitors have written about Identica or Flock or what have you. So I can reference that. But then my eyes will sometimes tweets will jump out at me, and someone just said something about Identica or Flock or what have you 5 minutes ago or an hour ago or a couple of days ago that didn't score high in the traditional Google algorithm, but it's fresh and new, and sometimes it's really important, and it really complements the research that I'm doing using the traditional Google algorithm.
Interesting.
Yeah, so
I'd love to, but, you know, when one of these stories is breaking, it would be really interesting just to be able to look over your shoulder and just sort of watch what you're doing. It's fascinating. I mean, I'm not that advanced on this stuff. I'm not there, you know.
It's just tools, you know. I think we probably all have
yeah.
different tools that we've got set up. I mean,
we have different
uh-huh.
goals. I'm not trying to, you know. You and I, we do different things. I mean, I'm not trying to beat anybody else. There's nobody that I'm – in fact, I have a robots.txt on scripting.com that blocks TechMeme. So TechMeme – my stories will actually never appear on TechMeme. They just can't. So I'm totally not, I'm opting out of that. I never have really been part of that race, and I don't want to. But I understand that you do, and for you, this, and I want that information flow, though. That doesn't mean I don't refresh TechMeme 25 times a day.
Because
I do. I'm really, and I'm, you know, the intravenous feed that I'm looking for. You know, I really want this stuff to be coming in. I like this, the real, which reminds me, we need to talk about what FriendFeed did today. Did you see that? The FriendFeed real-time search, you know, Steve
Gilmore. I wrote about it, and you tweeted. That's right, you did write about it.
Yeah, yeah. So what did you think? What was your net? I mean, let me just say this. Steve Gilmore is like, he's having, you know, he's in ecstasy. I don't want to, I was going to say something more colorful, but we won't go there. He finally got his track, he said. Steve Gilmore's got track.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so yeah. Maybe I almost thought, by the way, of asking him if he would come on Bad Hair Day, because, man, that guy sure does have bad hair, right? I mean, it's like we could learn a thing or two from Steve, right?
I think that sounds like a great idea.
I think at some point we want to hear for sure. Yeah. So anyway, now enough preamble. What do you think, Marshall? What was that like?
Well, you know, I was a little late to writing about it, so which was fine, but
you know, I don't care, right? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. So I got to thinking about it, and I wasn't real sure how well it was performing at first, and you know, real time search is, you know, it'll be passé next week, and there's, you know, there's issues like that. But what I thought was interesting was to look at
how. Wait a second. Whoa, hold on. How could you say it'll be passé next week when you're talking about all these sophisticated systems you've got in place to do just exactly the same thing? Isn't this what you wanted? Isn't this exactly what you want?
Oh, to some degree. I'm just teasing about how. I mean, it's
okay,
pretty amazing how the real time thing has just come on like a ton of bricks, and you know, everybody's doing it. I'm not sure anyone's doing it all that well.
But Steve Gilmore, right there. You're looking at Steve. That's the one man band. He made that happen.
Cool.
I think.
Well, I'd try to listen real close to what Steve says, except I haven't been able to since he's been all real time himself. I haven't listened to the Gilmore Gang in weeks or months. It's terrible.
I got a clip for you, man. They don't do it anymore. You didn't. How about that for real time?
It's so real time. It passed me by. Well, so the thing that I think was interesting there was, you know, FriendFeed is just a. It's a fascinating search tool already, and then if you add in real time, you know, at the end of it, maybe that's the, you know, how people say you open up a fortune cookie and you read the fortune cookie and say in bed at the end, perhaps, you know, more and more will say in real time, and FriendFeed search in real time is quite interesting. It has a lot of potential if they take it to the next step, and the next step that I advocated that they take in the article that I wrote was that they try to become a serious business intelligence tool, and that they take on some of the social media monitoring tools that are out there that may or may not be a little lightweight, you know, things like Radian6 and Scout Labs and stuff that the PR people pay hundreds or thousands of dollars for and then upsell to their clients. I think FriendFeed could just, you know, blow that all out of the water, potentially, with this real-time search.
Because they have access to the Twitter firehose, right? I mean, they're getting the full feed, and they're one of, like, five or 20s that has that. So, yeah, I think by definition they could beat everybody because of that.
Well, there's the fire hose thing. That's true, but there's a lot of.
But you also said that they need to get proactive in terms of not just waiting for people to add feeds into their flow. They need to actually go out and start finding them. Right?
Yeah, you know, right now you can search Twitter for Twitter, but when you search FriendFeed, you get Twitter, and then you get a bunch of other quieter
right.
signals that are also real important, like Google Reader yeah. shared items and delicious bookmarks and bookmarks in Vigo, you know, a much
RSS,
smaller
level. They're also getting feeds. That's called friend feed, right? So they're getting
uh-huh.
all those feeds too, right?
Yeah, it's an incredibly rich search, you know, a conversation search tool. But right now they only index the people who are freaky early adopters that have gone in and created an account and turned on the spigot for all their different services. And the next step would be for them to go proactive, I think, and start,
you know what they need
actively.
To do, Marshall? This
sure.
what they need to do is they need to do what Share Your OPML used to do, what we were doing with that. I mean,
they
first of all, sad tear comes to my eye. I mean, for one thing, they need to start reading and writing OPML. I mean, that's ridiculous that they've been around this long and they don't do that.
Well, you know, I think part of it, Dave, might be that it's not all RSS feeds that they're pulling in.
I know, but it's called friend feed, and so why wouldn't they want me to be able to import? I mean, start with import. That's right.
Yep.
I mean, I've got my OPML file, right? So sure they. Why wouldn't they want to read it? I mean, that's a gift, right? They're getting it. Now, once they're reading it, writing it is no big deal, and so they don't write out the Twitter feeds that you're subscribed to, or they can make that an option, make it a checkbox. But that's the only thing that they don't need to. And I've got all these things, and why not, by the way, since there are RSS feeds for Twitter accounts, why not go ahead and put them in there? I mean, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Well, unfortunately,
there's a reason why they're not doing it. It's political. There's only explanation because the technical issue is trivial. There's nothing to reading. I mean, every time I write OPML support for one of my aggregators, and I've written so many of them, I mean, it takes me 15 minutes to do the importing part and maybe 2 hours to write the exporting part. It's not a big
deal.
What's
the political side of this?
I don't really, is the political side of it?
I don't understand what the policy, I mean, I think it's because they're dumbing down the service in this crazy hope that they'll attract more mainstream users who are intimidated by all the noise and options and stuff.
It could be that it's even worse. That's even worse. I mean, that says basically that there's nobody driving that train. I mean, basically it's just there are no tracks and there's no one driving it and they don't know where they're going, right? I
hope they'll tell me otherwise.
Wouldn't it be? I thought after seeing that they announced this today and knowing we were doing the podcast, I thought about inviting, one of the two founders on, but you know, I have listened to them so many times on Gilmore Gang, and they're really astute. You know, this is one of the reasons I think it's politics, is because they're very, very good at spinning answers to questions. But that's not what I want from my technologists. I want them to just go ahead and do the stuff that's obvious, you know. And I don't think that it's – I don't know whether it's just it got lost somewhere in there. You know, that's the theory you present, right? And there are features that did get lost, right? So it's certainly possible. That's one of the answers. But I think it's
political. Unfortunately, Dave, OPML, has just never – people – what's up with OPML? I mean, why – I adore it. You know, I think that it's – they're just conceptually the idea of curating a bound collection of dynamic sources – you know, and sharing that is a poetic act. I honestly do, and I'm not saying that because I'm on here this podcast with you, our podcast, but because I've always loved it. When I first discovered it, I went right out and I put together an OPML file of my favorite environmental organizations feeds and my favorite video blog feeds, and I published them all on my blog, and said, you know, share your topical OPMLs with me. But for whatever reason,
we only have 5 minutes left, so.
What other people have not taken a hold of that.
I know. You're one in a million, Marshall. That's why I'm doing the podcast with you, you know, and not all those other people. I think the impulse to share isn't something that everybody has in equal proportions. You have it. I have it. I don't think
I don't think that's it. You should read Bree Pettis's long post about how sharing is the number one disruptive force in the world right now, and how we're in the midst of a sharing revolution.
I get it. I've been able to make a lot of things happen in my career. I don't think anybody's, they may not like me personally, but I've been able to do that, okay? And part of it has been by very aggressive sharing. I'm not saying that it's altruism. Didn't say that. I said sharing just isn't in the genetics. I think if people really wanted to get things done, I mean, I could tell you long stories, but 5 minutes ain't going to be able to do this. But I think that they would go a lot further. There are a lot of things they haven't done at FriendFeed, okay? They haven't implemented the weblogs.com ping interface, right? I said that they do feeds, but there are constant complaints from FriendFeed users that they don't load in the changes from the feeds. You know, it takes them 2 hours to find a new piece on Scripting News. I mean, you know, why are they only pulling it once every 2 hours? That's crazy. I mean, you know, and plus I've offered to ping them when I update, but the only way they'll take the ping is with their soup protocol, right? And I'm sorry, I'm not about to implement another protocol when there's already a perfectly good one out there that, you know, I already have code for. And it's much simpler. You know, weblogs.com ping is just a single HTTP call, requires absolutely no setup. And, you know, they could do it. Another one of these 5 minute things is no big deal. They haven't done it. I think it's political. And, you know, what the mindset that leads them to want to do that, it's a scary one to me. And so I don't even want to explain the politics because I can't even imagine it. But,
Well, I sure hope
Go ahead.
I hope that they will wrap their heads around the. Maybe that's silly to say, but I hope they'll lean towards power and sophistication and living up to their potential. And not lean away from that in hopes that they can get more mainstream users. I think they should facilitate incredible conversations for early adopters and then allow us to accept their sale of conversation monitoring technology to businesses that will subsidize the conversation infrastructure.
I have a better business plan for FriendFeed, actually. Although it doesn't in any way preclude what you just said, is that they should make a Twitter toolkit. They should make it possible for anybody to build a Twitter on top of theirs, okay? In other words, I want to be able to, through their API, to define an application that is doing just what Twitter does, but then make it really easy to turn on all the other things that they do. Yeah, I mean, that would be a killer app. Because I keep running into companies that are in the publishing business that, by all rights, would want to compete with Twitter but don't have the first idea about how to get the technology built. And here you've got a technology company that could roll out of bed in the morning and produce a Twitter. I mean, I think that they have they're probably better at writing a Twitter than Twitter itself is, yet they haven't been willing to do that. Right. So I say make a toolkit for building Twitters, you know, and then have it do everything. So, you know, I love the discussion, the threaded discussion things. That's a feature Twitter has to have, for sure. So, but let's start at the base. Now, I don't think they should dumb down their main product. Oh, we're down to 90 seconds. I hate it when they do this, because nobody else can hear that, right? Did you hear that, Marshall, 90 seconds?
I did not.
You did not?
No. Okay. No, it's like 140 characters only in audio.
Yes, so how do you do that? What do you do with 90 seconds? Only it's not even 90 seconds anymore.
You navel gaze about the fact that you're talking for only 90 seconds or 140 characters.
Yes, and we didn't even get to the 60 seconds down, and we didn't even get to Facebook.
That's really a shame. I've been writing about it all week, and I think it's fascinating. So
okay.
Maybe there will be
maybe we'll
more development
next week. Now, there's another thing we didn't talk about that I have on my list is Michael Jackson. Is that sad or what? I mean, that's terrible. And I had, you know, it's like, well, we're going to have to do better with the time next week.
Yeah, well, I hope it was interesting this week. I enjoyed it.
Is that what you hope? I hope it wasn't. No, it wasn't. I'm sure. I'm just kidding. Yeah, no. This is a think about who we should have as a guest, and because I want to do that. I want to, if not next week, the week after, we should have another person in here.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
We'll take nominations in the Friend Feed Room or the Bad Hair Day blog.
Okay, everybody. I think that's it for this episode of Bad Hair Day. They just told us in 5 seconds. Hello. Okay, cue the music. I'll see you later, Marshall.
Okay, take care, Dave. Bye-bye.
Oh,